is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
It's time for Enlightenment in the City with Eli Hoshotara on the News for the Soul Network. Eli is a spiritual coach and intuitive reader with a unique flair. Strong yet soft, compassionate with a heart, she lives the consciousness of being feminine with strength. Eli tells it like it is. Welcome Eli Hoshotara back to News for the Soul.
I'm your host for this. Hi, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. I'm your host for this hour, Eli Hoshotara, and you've hit the Enlightenment in the City part of the programming. So let's talk a little bit about boundaries. And we're going to do mailbag today. So if you have questions, please feel free to write in. That is, and you can write to us at ontheair@tellus.net. So Tellus is our local phone company, just like Tellus, like tell us your problems, just with only one L. So that's ontheair@tellus.net. And you can send in your questions there, or you can hold on to them and wait to get on the line live next week. So let's have a quick talk about boundaries, because it's been coming up again where people are thinking it's bad to hold a boundary. You're bad, bad, bad. And you'll notice that bad, bad, it's bad, for anybody familiar with the sheeple term. So why does that happen? You know, how does the sheeple come into it? Well, because people, you get these interesting facets. So people will fall into, you know, codependent, independent, or interdependent as a very, very loose guideline overall in society. And that's, you know, and everybody's got all the different flavors. It's just that you express one of them more often than you will the other ones. And if you are, in a community where people don't really know how to use this stuff, like self-development, properly and appropriately, what ends up happening is that some of the ways that you're going to interpret the, or some of the ways that the self-development ideas are interpreted tend to become, well, let's just say a little bit interesting, and there's the way that they're being presented as this is what you should do shows that there's still some growth that needs to happen in the community. Okay, we'll put it like that. We'll put it very politely. And when people don't really understand, what happens is you get a bunch of people who start really pressing you to use self-development and the way that they're interpreting it in a certain way. Now, if you have somebody who has a correct interpretation of it, this may not be every single interdependent person, because you're always going to have growth in one teaching more than you will with another, but you're more likely to have in an interdependent community more of an idea of how it's going to work, or at least have a healthier baseline, so even if it's not right, it's not going to necessarily screw you over. And it's important to understand with a lot of the teachings are there to get you to a certain point, and as you keep growing, you will bypass the point that the teaching will take you. And so you release the teaching eventually, not because you're sinking back down, unless you are giving up your practices too much and you do sink back down, but it's not because you're sinking back down. It's, think of it as training wheels on a bicycle. You're riding a bike, you've got the training wheels on. They're supposedly supposed to help you balance. I hated training wheels when I was a kid. Those things did not help balance, but okay, it's an idea, very, you know, interesting idea. And it doesn't really work. And sometimes what people are, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that the teachings don't work, but it's sort of like it's a limitation and you need to chew on it, and that helps you to dissolve certain ideas, but there's limitations in it because you will eventually go beyond them. So even though, you know, learning how to ride a bicycle, even though training wheels are helpful for some people, apparently, because they keep making the darn things, or a child feels safer doing it because they've got the training wheels on, some people, you know, need stronger guidelines because they really don't know what they're doing. or they want the safety of knowing that they're on the right path, or something's not making sense for them. So they need a little, they feel better with a little bit more instruction. So I offer the latter. I offer, you know, clearer, more concise construction that's a little bit more informative, so that people can let go a little bit easier of some of the things that are getting in their way when they're trying to use the teaching more appropriately. But eventually, the training itself is kind of like a training wheel that it does eventually, you do eventually leave it off, because the way that it is structured, it is meant to eventually be broken through and passed. When people don't understand that, and they're very stuck, especially if they're stuck in not knowing how to use something properly, you get some really, we'll be polite and say, creative ways of ways that people interpret things, and especially in codependency. So codependency is really me, you know, and it becomes very, very self-involved. Now, sometimes in codependency, people are like, wait, I give to somebody else so much. What do you mean? It's me. Well, me can also be when you're dealing with somebody else who takes too much or is always, you know, demanding more, and they're not really, you know, making an effort and in the relationship. And, you know, if you want to be with them, they're very clear that, you know, you really don't have rights in the relationship because you have certain genitals or whatever, or you have, you know, a certain skin color, or you have the certain skin color of the opposer, or whatever, those sorts of things are, it's eventually it comes, sorry, I know that for some people that last one kind of sounded a little bit like, what, she didn't just say that. Yeah, actually I did, because it is the same, you know, it's the same thing. Sometimes people are like, you know, you have, and you see this with rich people, I'll use finance as an example, because that tends to be a less of a sensitive subject. You do get people who think, oh, you're rich, you owe me, right? And it's not true, and it becomes like, I'm poor, so me, you owe me. But people get rich because they've studied, they know where to implement certain patterns, and no, you don't owe somebody who hasn't chosen to do that work. Codependency really fucking hates that, okay? Really, really hates it, which is why even for people in codependency, you get people who are very out of balance, who are pushing you around to get needs met, bullying you to get needs met, and are really not offering anything back in any area of life where there's a push that is out of balance. and this is when you get the misinterpretations of self-development from that codependent viewpoint. People get very out of balance and think that they're magically owed something, regardless of whether you've actually had anything to do with the subject matter at all. And it is extraordinarily common in codependency to ignore all facts that somehow would possibly go against the thought process that somebody is somehow a victim, even when they're in the midst of actually being abusive towards you, which is really interesting. So you're the boss, you know, they're abusing you. But you have, like, quote unquote, the power because you own the company. So you do have a power to fire somebody, but there are certain limitations that you have as a boss as well. In certain areas, you can't just fire somebody from a 10-year job just because you decide you don't like them. In a lot of areas, there has to be other factors present. So just because somebody feels like they're a victim is very different than the fact that they actually, it's very different than whether or not they're actually a victim. Excuse me. And in fact, if you've ever seen a bully attack you, you call them on it and they start whining and they try to get everybody else against you and how dare you, you're mean. That's what it looks like to be on the receiving end of somebody who's playing the victim, and they're actually being abusive while they are busy playing the victim. And does that happen? Abso-freaking-lutely. Most people, when they're in abusive situations and they're like, I'm the victim, how dare that person play the victim? What they often miss is that hurt people hurt other people, number one. But number two, when you think that you are allowed to lash out at other people unchecked because of something that's happened in your past, and that happens a lot in codependency, and the more codependency there is in enough different areas, including the ones on whether you are responsible for your own behaviors, people often get very, very abusive. And think that you somehow owe them while they're busy abusing you. So that is just being on the, when you're being faced with that, you're just on the receiving end of somebody being extraordinarily abusive while claiming the victim. So can victims be abusive? Abso-freaking-lutely. And what most people who are playing the victim often don't correlate is that the reason that they've gotten abused where abuse actually has happened, you likely, you know, you're getting torn apart, you're getting beaten down, somebody's consistently attacking you, they seem to enjoy using you as an emotional punching bag. One of the reasons that that happens is that's because what it looks, that's what it looks like when you're on the receiving end of somebody who thinks that bad things have happened to them, so they shouldn't have to control their reactions. And when you get that level, by the way, when some people do have those patterns, you know, this is when you have, in the hospitals, for example, we will not signs that say we will not tolerate abusive language. You will be, you may be removed, and you may face criminal charges. Codependency, that's bad and mean, that's wrong. People should be able to take it out on you. In some cases, people even think they should be able to hit you because bad things have been done to them. And yet, the reason why, quote-unquote, bad things have been done to them, where those things actually have been present, can often be because somebody else abused them when they were a child, because they felt like they had a right to take it out on them because something happened to them. And this is one way that patterns of abuse actually continue on. And they'll go on for generation after generation after generation. One of the reasons it passes on is because people think that they're entitled to take it out on other people just because something happened to them. Now, it's not always a just because something happened to them, because sometimes people have really freaking horrific stories. Now, does everybody who's playing the victim use again that it's an excuse to be abusive to you have a really horrific story? No. Actually not. Some of those things are learned behavioral patterns, and sometimes people create a life a lot worse than they actually would have had through playing the victim, which is often surprising to them. And that's why sometimes when people are feeling very victimized in life, even when things are actually going wrong and actually and something bad is actually happening to them, they can feel like people are attacking them for playing the victim. And you get into issues like, you know, victim shaming. So the problem with playing the victim a lot is it is a form of Peter and the wolf, the boy who cried wolf, 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 there's a wolf there, and there's not really a wolf there. And he was doing it to get attention. And there are some people with certain diagnoses in terms of mental health issues where they are definitely attention-seeking. And they're doing it to get attention. So that's, you know, a very small percentage of people who have mental health issues. I'm just simply saying that that is, that definitely does exist out there. And so when you're holding boundaries and, you know, you're going through all this stuff, you're going through all these attacks in places where you actually haven't done anything, and that's actually haven't done anything, not in codependency, where people lash out, pull a bunch of stuff, and then act like they haven't done anything at all. But when you're in moments of haven't actually done anything and you think it's bad or mean or wrong to hold a boundary, the reason why it's okay to have a boundary is because sometimes you are just being in the midst of somebody having moments or time periods, for some people, you know, weeks or months or years, where they honestly think they're entitled to just take their stuff out on you. So you do have a right to say no to that. Now, some people have a hard time with that because they do the same thing, and it can be a very isolating experience when people have that pattern. They don't usually connect their own pain and suffering and their own rejection with their own behavioral patterns. And are those, is that a behavioral pattern where people get rejected as they bash people and play the victim? Yep, that's a really, really excellent way to blow up situations and get rejected really, really quickly. So in codependency, when people see a bad behavior, and again, this isn't, you know, everybody in every moment when there's a lot of codependency, because everybody's got interdependent moments as well. But when somebody is stuck in this area of codependency, you point out anything where it's actually not serving them, or it's, you know, a bad idea, or it's a negative action, and they'll actually grab it and they'll use it more to prove to you that you're wrong and it's really not a bad action, and hot, you can't prove them wrong. And so they'll actually make themselves this toxic and abusive behavior. They'll actually ramp it up and make it worse because they think that's going to prove you wrong for having a problem with it. The problem with it is that doesn't actually prove you wrong. It just shows that, oh, look, the person, you have a problem with a person because of being very abusive. And anytime you bring it up, they're going to get even more abusive and they're going to get very large in the abusiveness. So it becomes more of a warning sign. And for anybody who was willing to help, they go, oh, wait, no. They, you know, if they don't understand the pattern, they just think, oh, there's a lot more abuse there than they realize. And they walk away and that becomes their breaking point. In codependency, that's bad and wrong. You know, how dare you walk away from abuse? So abuse patterns continue in codependency because it is considered very wrong by codependent standards to walk away from abuse. And the reason that it's bad, and again, this is where we get that bad, because when you have a group that holds on to an idea that this is going to get them something, even when it messes them over, but if they're not making that connection to their own behavior yet, or they don't want to make that connection to their own behavior yet, they'll keep repeating the pattern, and they'll keep insisting that you take the pattern as well. And interdependency, and I want to be clear that having more of an interdependent life does not mean that you are perfect in every single moment. Sometimes when there's a lot of codependency, people think they need to be perfect in order to have a great life, and they think other people need to be perfect, and then they'll say, well, I don't think that, but their actions show that they really need you to be perfect. Like, you're not allowed, if somebody says you can't do this or do that and you eat something that's unhealthy, maybe you had a croissant, a conventional croissant with gluten, and it was filled with chocolate, with sugar, no, you know. And then all the, you know, everything that you've ever done that's been beneficial, very interdependent, you know, it blows up in their eyes and they can never talk to you again because you ate a croissant with chocolate in it. Because, you know, if you were truly a light being, you would be a past sugar addiction, weed addiction, et cetera, et cetera. You should be past chemical addiction or anything that's unhealthy for you. You should be pure. But not everybody takes that route. And that's really interesting. And in fact, some very deep people, in gurus, for example, they bless the food and the guru takes it, eats some of it, and it's, you know, there's something to it. I forget what it is off the top of my head. The very least of it, though, is that it actually feels very good for the practitioners to know that they've been able to contribute something to their guru. And sometimes, you know, and outside of this, there are times when you do let people serve you, even if it's not something that you want, and you take it and you receive it, because it helps to cancel an energetic debt, where if you don't let them give you something, you don't take it from them, and you've done a lot for them, it can actually keep them more hooked on energetically and latched on past the point of it being appropriate, because they'll feel a need to give back to you, or they want to help you, or they want to serve you, even if you don't actually have a need for them or for anything that they're going to give you or that they're going to be capable of giving you. Some people get very insulted by that. what, I'm not good enough for you? And, you know, in some cases, some people are too dangerous to let them, you know, to let them help you or to let them into your life very much. But if they bring you a donut, even though you're like, great, I'm gluten-free, yay, you know, sometimes you take the donut because they've offered it to you and thank you very much. And you're taking it, even though you're still giving it to them by taking it, it's just a subtle energy form that they may not pick up on. But you do it because it helps them pay you back so that it cancels the energetic debt so they don't need to latch onto you because they keep having an overwhelming need in order to keep paying you back. And this is one of the reasons why practitioners, it's important to make sure that, you know, when people are offering you money, even for those of you that feel guilty about it, it is important to take it, even if it's like, you know, they can only pay you $5 an hour and, you know, and they've got a problem with it because they really don't have like even $5. And sometimes, you know, you lower it and say, well, you know what? There's a Tim Hortons down the street, you know, they've got a really great apple fritter. how about you bring me an apple fritter next time and we'll call it even. Now, is an apple fritter equal to in terms of an hour-long session? No. Financially, it is not. And there's no real getting away from that. But if it's the only way that somebody can, you know, afford it and do it in a way that they feel comfortable with paying you for your services without it being a trigger, and for some people, you know, well, if they have to bring you two apple fritters and you charge $150 US a session, well, that's going to be a bit much. And, you know, so you kind of got to work with it. But having somebody who's in that position and you're accepting the fritter, that one fritter, not two, because you can't be greedy, even though it costs $1.29 or whatever it would cost, you know, and you charge $150 for a session. But you sometimes let those things come in because it helps them cancel the debt so that they don't keep attached on beyond what is going to be beneficial for them, and also so that they're not being attached on and keeping on to the point where it's not going to be beneficial for you either, or it's going to keep them attached to you in a way that's going to interrupt their path too much because they feel like they owe you. Reason why it is important to accept something in relationship. And so for some people, it's, you know, again, depending on making sure it's like, you know, your own gender and they're not threatened by the hug. Sometimes it's just a hug, you know, like, thank you very much. You know, for some people, it's like, hey, I heard about this really great opportunity, sent it to you, and thank you very much. I really appreciate you thinking of me. And those are small ways that you can, if you can receive it, you can let somebody pay back for what you're doing. And again, it's not necessarily going to be covering the cost. And in some cases, if you want to be paid the actual wage per hour, you completely and absolutely have a right to ask for that. But it's just a simple way to help, you know, cancel the debt and get things more in balance if you let somebody bring you an apple fritter or whatever it is. So when we're holding boundaries, getting back to boundaries, they're not mean because there's a lot of people who are very, very out of balance. And part of the reason why people have a lot of problems is they don't understand where they're out of balance or where their own actions are contributing to their own problems. Now, sometimes there are problems like medical problems, but even medical problems, there's a lot more that can be done than people realize. So holding a boundary, there's different reasons why you will need to hold a boundary with somebody. Sometimes it's because they're very out of balance and that the way that they're asking to get their needs met would actually be really detrimental or abusive. And you get that a lot in codependency where people think that the way to get something that they want, they feel like they're going to be getting burned for being too kind or being too loving. Now, does that happen? When there's enough codependency, yes. Kindness is seen as a weakness when there's too much codependency. So what'll happen is people feel, you know, they'll snarl at you basically in some cases, literally, really get very angry because they think when you're too nice, because they don't trust you. Because whenever people have been nice to them in the past, they try to use them for something. And so if you're nice to people in codependency, it means you're not holding a boundary. And this is why in self-development, they often say things like, you get more, you get better, what is it, you attract, what is it, you attract more, oh, I forget what it is, something along the lines of, you know, you attract what you want better with sweetness than you do with bitterness or sourness. or you attract more bees to pollinate with honey than you do with whatever it is. I forget what the saying is. But basically what it is you get further by being nice than by being mean. Now, is that true? If you're dealing with people that are not out of codependency enough and they can take it when you're being nice to them, yes, maybe not all the time. And it also depends on, like, you know, what some people are calling nice and codependency. You got a 6-year-old trying to hit on a 20-year-old, he's going to get their pennies. You know, he's being nice. That's not really what would actually be considered nice. That would be somebody being slimy and predatory, trying to make a very highly inappropriate goal happen, and that's not actually what we would call nice. That would be somebody being predatory but trying to say it's nice to get away with doing it. That's not being nice. That's being predatory, and you absolutely have a right to say no to that. The other reasons why you're holding a boundary is, you know, somebody doesn't know how to ask appropriately, and sometimes people have a problem with that, and they think asking appropriately means you have to suck up. And if you have to, you know, suck up like crazy to somebody to get them to do their own half of the work, you may want to look at whether you actually want that interaction or not. That can be a warning sign of people you may want to think twice about, is when there's a power trip that you need to beg to get people to do their own work. So what I mean by, you know, asking appropriately, some people don't, it's too vulnerable for them to just say, like, hi, would you help me with this? In some cases, because they don't know who to ask or they don't have the support, so they kind of end up asking too much in some cases of complete and total random strangers who may not want to get involved. Now, in codependency, that's bad. In interdependency, you know how much you can give to certain people, and you know what the fallout is going to be or what the benefits are going to be. So if you are, for example, when we were young adults, and I'm going to change the details a bit for privacy's sake, but one of my friends was looking for a place to live, and she wanted a roommate because she wasn't, you know, minimum wage. People tend to do better with roommates. And she was working minimum wage jobs. And so she called this one ad, and it's like, you know, hey, you can pay off part of your room, pay off part of your rent if you want to do housework. And she was a really excellent housekeeper even at a young age, like really, really clean, really, really tidy, really, really excellent at it, very good work ethic. So that worked for her because, you know, if she lives on her own, she has to clean the house anyways. So if she can live with somebody else and do some of the main housework and get a reduction on rent for something that she would do anyways just because she wants to live in a clean environment, then great, that would really work for her. And she called up, and it was this really slimy old guy who was like, yes, dear, oh, come by. Yes, the room is free. She's like, and it just seemed really weird. So we're like, lie and tell him you're younger than you are. She's like, well, I'm only 16 and I ran away from home. He's like, gets really excited. Oh, yes, well, dear, we need somebody to take care of you. Absolutely. You know, she's like, this guy sounds like he's the same age as my grandpa. And she's asking me, she's like, does this seem like it's a good idea? And I said, no, 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 warning sign, warning sign. But she wasn't quite sure. So she got one of her male friends to call and ask. And he's like, no, sorry, buddy, the room's taken, you know. And then she got another one of our female friends because she's like, you want to call him? Like, I don't want to talk to that guy. No. I understand that, but, you know, talking to what's giving warning red flags as a pedophile, not my idea of a cup of tea. not fun. So she got another friend to call, and the girl said, you know, like, well, you know, I'm only 18. You know, is that going to be okay? And he's like, oh, yes, dear, come by. Oh, we'd absolutely love to have you, you know, and really happy and perky with a creepy voice. So there are definite, you know, warning signs that happen in life. Sometimes when people are talking about love and light, they misinterpret some of the ideas because they're coming from the codependency mind frame. And when that happens, this is when you get people who are having a really hard life, or you had an experience where it's really, really bad for you to be there. It would be really, really excellent for you to leave. You're very, very clear about that. You know that it's healthy for you. The people around you that are emotionally healthy understand that it would be good for you to be out of that environment. But people with a lot of codependency will keep pushing you to keep going back in. And it's like, no. So, you know, when those things happen, one of the reasons why people have a hard time with supporting a healthy boundary in other people is if they do the negative behavior and they don't want to get rejected for it in codependency, you make it wrong to say no to the behavior, to the healthy behavior. And that doesn't make it the unhealthy behavior wrong. It just means that you're going to have people with issues of being abandoned, as one example, pushing you not to leave people behind just because they quote unquote don't measure up. But the reality of it is, don't leave people behind, even though they're causing a lot of problems in your life, even though they're toxic, and even though they're abusive towards you or your children in some cases. So if you ever wonder how some people keep ending up back up in abusive relationships time and time again, it's because their community is saying, well, if you have a good heart, which, you know, in the self-development terms, you know, have love in your heart. Great. In spiritual terms, have love in your heart. That's wonderful. That makes you a good person. And does having love in your heart make you a good person? That's what we tend to think of as a good person. It's not entirely accurate, but I will say it doesn't mean that you're a worse person because you say no and you want to say no to abuse. In codependency, though, because people don't have the skill set, and a lot of times people recognize that they have abusive behavioral patterns themselves, they don't want to make it wrong for you to leave because then you might leave them as well. And interdependency, if your behaviors aren't up to snuff in a certain area, you support things going on anyways that are going to be healthy and serving, even if you're not currently able to keep up. Now, codependency has a really hard time with that. You know, what if you don't eat super healthy and the person's going to leave? Well, if you're dealing with somebody who's got enough self-esteem and who's got enough healthy behaviors, here's the thing. Okay, you don't eat as healthy as they do, not by a long shot. Okay, some people, it's not as big of a deal as you think it is if you have a chocolate bar once in a while, or even if you have a chocolate bar every day. Some people can deal with food issues a lot better than others. for example, some people really don't have addiction issues with sugar. And so the fact that you've got cookies in the cupboard all the time isn't really going to be that big of an effect on them, or they don't think it's going to be that big of an effect on them, so they're not taking it into account. What will blow situation, though, is if somebody can't support the healthy habit and they start attacking you for it. So it becomes, oh, you eat salad for breakfast every day, or you try to get 6 cups of vegetables in, because a lot of doctors actually talk about that, about making sure you get that amount of fruit and vegetables in every single day in order for your body to function properly. And that's actually a practice a lot of doctors do, 6 cups of fruits and vegetables every single day. If you have somebody who's very threatened by that because they don't do it, and they attack for it, then it's not only are they not doing the behavior themselves, which you definitely do want in certain situations, but then it's going to be more than twice as bad, because not only do they not do it, which, again, isn't always a big deal in certain circumstances, but as soon as you start putting abuse into it through going under massive attacks because they don't do something, then it becomes a really big deal. Interdependency understands that. Codependency, when people are into thinking it's okay to lash out whenever they don't like something, will have a tendency, when you have people who are really in the swing of that, to attack when they see healthy behaviors, even if they're things that they're going to need. And it is a very common process, unfortunately, of human nature, when people do not have a skill set, to attack it and make it wrong. In interdependency, if you're living with somebody, your honey pie eats salad every single day for breakfast, you know, and it's like that 3-cup salad, and you're not going to do that, and quite frankly, I'm not going to eat the 3 cups of salad. I don't like lettuce a whole lot, you know, and for some people, their idea of lettuce is, or salad is, lettuce, bitter greens, delicious. If you can eat that, good for you. I can't, blah. I don't do that, but I eat other things that are very healthy for me. So in interdependency, you support things even if you don't do them, which I just did. If you eat that, great, good for you. I'm not going to do it because I really don't like bitter greens. I don't like lettuce a whole lot. I like it in sandwiches, but sitting down and eating a lettuce salad every day really does not work for my body. My body doesn't like it. And in fact, I actually discovered one of the reasons why you support when people don't like certain foods is they may not like certain healthy foods because it's actually not good for them, because they actually have an allergy to it. In interdependency, you can support that. It doesn't need to be, if you eat healthy, it doesn't always have to look a certain way. So if somebody eats bitter greens and you hate bitter greens, eating healthy does not have to constitute always eating bitter greens for breakfast every single morning. And I've definitely met people who enjoy doing that And they enjoy doing that, and they can do it every day, probably because their body needs something in the nutrients that come in there that you may not need as much, or you may be having a reaction to something in it, so it's not good for you. But there are other things you may be able to eat every single day. For example, I consume probably a whole lemon almost every single day. Why do I do that? My body loves it, and I don't quite feel complete without my lemon water every morning. And so my main drink, well, I drink other things, like I drink herbal teas. My main drinks tend to be teas and lemon water. And my body loves it. And I generally speaking, don't get tired of lemon water. And I haven't gotten tired of it very much over quite a long time, like at least 5 years, maybe even 8 years. And that is highly unusual for me that I'm not going to get tired of a food. So I don't get tired of lemons because lemons are very good for detoxing, and I was lucky enough to have a mother who installed metal fillings when I was a kid, and so even though I've had them removed, there's still little remnants, and my body really likes lemon water, and lemons are very good for detoxing, and that may be one of the reasons why I like it. So in interdependency, you support other people doing healthy serving behaviors, even if you don't do them, because you understand it's important to support other healthy behaviors. And we often understand this in self-development and even codependency, and especially with codependency, you'll get a lot of lists of what people are looking for. They want somebody supportive. Yeah, supportive. So part of being supportive is when somebody's doing something that's healthy, even if you don't do it, you're willing to say, well, good for you. You know, I'm happy you can do that, even if you can't do it yourself. In codependency, sometimes people have a hard time doing that. Why do they not want to do it? Because in codependency, you're being hypocritical if you support something that's healthy if you don't do it yourself. Here's the thing. It may not be good for you to do just because it's good for something else. So when we're talking about hypocrisy, there's a huge difference between being supportive and saying, you know, this is really good. I support you in doing it, even though I don't do it myself, which is interdependent. Hypocrisy is more, I don't do it, but I'm going to make you do it. So, I hate raw onions, and you don't like raw onions either, but I decided you're going to eat them. No. So, you know, and sometimes, and that's not like, you know, quite the definition of hypocrisy, but in codependency, you know, you get people who try to shove things down other people's throats, literally in the case with raw onions, because it's, you know, it's a form of punishing. They just are looking for somebody to take a bad mood out on. And again, that's one of the warning signs of, you know, hey, you may want to rethink this relationship, is when people are consistently looking to punish you. Other reasons where hypocrisy would be more likely to exist, you have somebody whose friend is doing really good. They're not doing those things in the other area, and they're holding it against you that you don't do them either. So, for example, I'll use love as an example because that's a really good one. That's really full of a lot of hypocrisy. So you get people who are like, I have love in my heart. My guru teaches love. And then they're attacking you because you don't have love in your heart. Well, attacking you because you don't have love in your heart is like calling the kettle calling the pot black, as the saying goes here in North America. If you're attacking the frick out of somebody because they're not doing something that you want in a way that you think you want it, and you're not doing it either, that would be hypocrisy, and that would be extraordinarily abusive. And you see that a lot in codependency, where people, they're demanding something out of you, like you should be kind, you should be loving to them, even while they're attacking you for different reasons. And then they use their guru, so to speak, as an excuse to attack you because their guru talks about always having love in their heart. So they're not doing it, and they're not doing it, and they're attacking you. So there's a huge difference between somebody's not even doing it themselves, and then they're attacking you for not doing it, which, again, hypocrisy and codependency, toxic and abusive. So we really start getting into all these different ways that's a really, really highly unserving behavior. In interdependency, you're not demanding other people eat bitter greens when you can't and you don't. And the more that you get into interdependency in enough areas, you're not expecting people to have skill sets above what they're currently able to do. In codependency, that can be really scary and that can be really threatening. Why? Because in codependency, if you don't correct behaviors, it can feel like of people around you, it really feels strongly like you're going to suffer. And is that true? In some cases, if people don't clean up their stuff, yes, you will go through continued abuse. In some cases, the person's not actually being abusive, but the person it thinks that their life is going to be improved by somebody else doing the behavior, which is very, very common in codependency. And this is why you get in codependency people who really aren't doing their work going around trying to shove everybody else into doing their work. In interdependency, people can be calmer, even for those of you that are the fire type personalities. I'm one of those fire types in some moments. So, but even a fire type personality can become like calmer and more peaceful. Now, it doesn't mean that a fire type, your version of calm and peaceful is going to look the same as other people's calm and calm and peaceful. Codependency kind of tries to fit everybody into this one homogenous mass of what they deem that you should look like so that they're okay. but in interdependency, people are calmer because they're a lot more reasonable about things. In codependency, that can be threatening because if you're reasonable about things, things may never get done and your whole world may fall apart, it can feel like, or it may feel like you're going to get, abused and have people attack you. And is that true? Are those things going to happen? Your odds go up in codependency. Excuse me. It doesn't mean that it will always happen in codependency in every single moment, even with people who are very toxic and very abusive. But knowing that it's going to be hanging over your head with some people because they've definitely demonstrated those behavioral patterns in the past, absolutely that is a cause for concern. In interdependency, you can support other people's behavioral patterns because if you're dealing with people who are interdependent enough, they're not going into attack mode on random things because it doesn't matter that you're doing them or they're not doing them because they're more in the reality of what is. And people have an easier time doing that because they actually know how things work. If people don't know how things work, that's when you get the backseat driver, right? You get the person who's always, muttering, complaining. They're not really doing the work. They're, always bitching and complaining about how everybody else is doing anything wrong and they're not really contributing anything themselves. And because they're not participating, they actually don't know what they're talking about very much, even though they act like they do. So not only are you not getting the participation, but you're getting a lot of attacks with the backseat driver. In interdependency, people who are doing enough things in enough different areas, there's a lot more reasonability, and that's actual reasonability, not codependent version of reasonability, which is you should be reasonable and just take anything everybody throws at you. in interdependence support, when people are actually being reasonable, it's because they understand it takes time for things to unfold. Now, this doesn't mean that every single person who's more on the interdependent side is going to be perfect in every single moment. Why? Sometimes you forget that different levels exist of skill set, which is one of the reasons why I put it out there. Because a lot of people tend to calm down and they have a much easier time letting things flow a little bit more when there's a reminder that there's different levels to it. And the reason you can calm down with people who are otherwise in interdependency or who are otherwise emotionally stable is because you know that even if an issue does arise, and maybe they have a moment where they the old pattern flicks up for a moment or even a week, you know that you can have a conversation with them or you'll put a big boundary in place and maybe you're arguing the boundary a bit. but you know that you can, because you've had enough experience with them that they're a really good person, good people. You love them. You adore them. You recognize your own stuff has come up as well. So it's not just them. And you know that you can generally speak to them because you can actually have those conversations with them, right? Like, oh, really? Did you really mean that?
No.
Okay. Love you. I can be hugged now. Okay. And maybe they're going to do the same thing with you. They're like, come on, dude. It's like, yeah, I know. Or maybe you grumble a little bit and they just smile at you annoyingly and they love you and they're just going to let you go through your crap. And maybe they're very wonderful and they listen to your crap for 6 months while you're complaining because you're just back in complaining mode. again, not as much as codependency, but you're just doing this low-grade grumble. and those things happen. And why can you allow that when there's enough interdependency? Because you know that the person is just doing a little bit of a low-grade grumble, but they're not normally acting in those ways. And that's really important to understand for the distinctions. So when we are, doing these things from, a healthier place, those aren't always going to be understood by people who are very in codependency. And so sometimes people in codependency, even if you're doing something very healthy, they will label it as bad and wrong. And it's important to understand that when people are going through those processes, the chances are that they're in communities where a lot of things are happening to them, because codependency, people tend to burn a lot of bridges, and a lot of times they can end up with a lot of isolation, or the ones that are able to make friends may have a lot of people pulling stuff on them. Some do better in it. I'm really amazed at how some people can really make a lot of friends, even though they're very, very codependent and they have a really highly codependent community. And I really want to be clear, that's absolutely beautiful skill, and it's a very good skill set to have, that you know how to get along with other people. But generally speaking, the more that people are in codependency, the rougher it tends to be and the less sense it starts to make. And this is when you start getting attacked for things that you have absolutely no control over. You know, somebody else fudged up. Well, it's your fault because you didn't warn them. You know, you're getting yelled and screamed at, the whole nine yards. So interdependency, you're allowed to hold a boundary, because generally speaking, you want either understand that's really going to be bad for you and somebody needs to get the appropriate help. And that way that they're going to get that help is probably going to need to come from a professional. In other moments, they're just barking up the wrong tree. So it becomes, for what I do, for my modality, I help people with their emotional problems. What I don't do is fix people's cars. So if your car is broken down, I could fix a car. You know, give me enough time, you give me a manual, I have somebody to work with, I could figure out how to fix a car. I'm smart, I'm capable, I could figure those things out. It would just take time. So no, I'm not going to fix your car on a busy highway and try to figure that out, because I would need training in order to know how to do that. Part of interdependency, a boundary is simply saying, like, no, I'm not going to help fix your car, but you know what? I have the name of a really great mechanic. He's really honest. He does a really good job. He's a really nice guy. Let's call him and see if we can get the car towed to his garage. So that is a boundary, but it's a very smooth boundary that also provides a solution that somebody may very sorely need. So is that me? No, that's actually a really wonderful thing that you're doing for somebody. You're helping them build resources, or you're sharing resources with them that you have when it's appropriate for you to do so. And it's not going to be appropriate for you to share all your resources with some people. Is that bad or me? No. It's like, hey, a mechanic would really do this. Maybe all you know is that, one place charges a lot less than other places. So that would be a really good place to go check out, and maybe if somebody's really stuck, and some people are, you call around to the different garages and ask how much they charge per hour. Oh, look, this big mega center, they fix cars and they've got a better price on tires, for example. So let's get your car towed there, because you'll save $20 on a tire. the other work sounds like it's going to be cheaper, and you can even compare prices for them just on general things, even if you don't know what they actually need to have done. And you help somebody build a resource that way. And so if somebody's very stuck, they'll often stay with one resource and do that one on repeat, even if it doesn't work for them, because they're too scared, because they don't have the skill set to branch out. And in that case, if you can direct them to something that's actually going to be beneficial for them and they can go there, they'll keep going to the same tire center for the next 20 years. And you've helped them, even if it's not perfect, even if they eventually want to change mechanics, you've helped them figure out something for a long term in some cases, because they don't have the skill set to go anywhere else. So that's not mean. That's really, really helping somebody. When a boundary is mean is when sometimes people use a quote-unquote boundary in a way that actually is mean. So they're using a boundary to be mean. They're using a boundary to have an excuse to take their stuff out on other people. So that would be a mean way to use a boundary. Another mean way to use a boundary would be setting somebody up to fail. Somebody left some stuff at your house. Great. you've decided you don't like it after all, but they can't come pick it up for a couple more weeks, which is the time that they had agreed to pick it up anyways. If you don't like that and you decide you want to hold the boundary, and if they don't come pick it up right away, you're going to stick all the stuff out in the street and you're going to let other people come help themselves to it. That would be a very mean way of holding a boundary. And this is one of the reasons why in self-development it's important to know that it's important to understand that it's important to keep your word. So if you don't like the fact that somebody is going to keep their stuff in your garage for a whole month, even though that's what you agreed to, don't store people's stuff in the future, but keep your word for now. Codependency, people kind of want what they want, what they want, what they want, regardless of the outcome. So if you're using it, you know, somebody, for example, maybe they forgot the stuff in the garage and they booked a trip to Hawaii, and then all of a sudden you're looking on their Instagram and they're like, hi, greetings from Hawaii. And you're like, it's getting cold out. I'm in Canada, so a lot of people across the country, when it snows, you want to have your car in your garage because it saves you from having to get out in the morning. And finding out people are supposed to move their stuff out of your garage and they didn't, and you're going to spend an extra 2 weeks digging your car out of the snow because somebody wasn't being responsible for their stuff. Oh, that's not fun. So sometimes, you know, you have those polite conversations with people, right? Now, some people have done that and decided that they're going on a trip around the world for 6 months. So is it wrong, bad and wrong to say, okay, this was your responsibility to handle it. Do you have a friend who can come pick your stuff up and put it in storage for you? No. Do you need to dig your car out of the snow for 6 months or however long it lasts in the coldest part of Canada because somebody doesn't want to fly back or they don't want to make other arrangements? No, you don't have to do that. Is that bad that you're enforcing a boundary? No. Why? Because it was their responsibility to do it before they left. Now, if it's 2 weeks in Hawaii, you know, sometimes things happen, not your idea of a fun time. Maybe move the boxes into someplace in the house so that you can park your car. It's not your idea of a fun time, but you're resourceful. You find a different solution. You find a different way that you can make it work. And you do that until they come back and you make it very clear, okay, I need you to pick up your stuff as soon as you come back. Now, if you get things like, well, we're going to be busy for a couple weeks after we come back from Hawaii because we've got to catch up on work, do you have a right to call? There are laws in certain places where you do have to give people notice to come pick up their stuff or before you can get rid of their stuff if they don't pick it up. So there are certain laws and certain guidelines that you do have to have in place before you can do that. That applies in real estate. I don't know if that applies to personal belongings. But, you know, if there is a mistake such as, you know, they did forget and they will clean it up the first weekend after they're back. So, you know, 5-6 days, so it's going to be 3 weeks. if it's a really bad snowstorm and you're digging it out, can you say, actually, I really want you to come pick. Okay, I understand you're coming back. I understand you have a lot of work to catch up on. I want you to pick it up. I'll give you 2 days. I want you to come pick it up. No, I don't want to come wait for the weekend because I'm having to dig my car out. Now, some people with really bad skill sets will refuse to pick it up. And then, you know, is it mean to hold a boundary to call and find out what your legal rights are? Absolutely not. You know, especially if somebody says, well, they'll pick it up in 2 weeks and they haven't done it. And you're like, okay, well, can you pick it up this weekend? And they say, sure, and then they don't show up, and then they're not returning your text, and it's been a month. Do you have a right to find out what your rights are and enforce that? Absolutely. Is that mean? No. Commandeering people's time and energy or forcing them into it or manipulating people into things, such as lying to get you to keep taking their stuff, is actually toxic. I want you to understand that. In codependency, when people are very disorganized, holding a boundary is often considered bad, mean, and wrong because people don't understand that they have to organize themselves and or may have absolutely no interest in doing it and or have senses of entitlement that they should be able to get away with it. In codependency, it is very common that people don't mean what they say. So when they say to you, I'll come pick it up in a couple of weeks, in codependent language, that can often mean, I'll say this, you'll agree to it, but we both know that I shouldn't have to do it because if you're a good person, you're going to let me off the hook. And it can be very, very hard when people have a lot of codependency for them to understand that this is actually happening. They actually do need to come pick up their stuff. There is a very real boundary that's being held. And that is when people have too much experience with that, with a boundary not really being meant as a boundary, they won't stick to the boundary because they don't actually believe that it's serious. So you do have the right to enforce boundaries, and they're not mean because it's just simply, hey, look, you know what? This is your stuff. You're responsible for it. You got a car. Come pick up your stuff. It's not mean to ask somebody to do that. And it is absolutely not mean to say, okay, well, these are my rights. I've given you notice that you need to come pick it up. I have a right to put it out on the street in 2 weeks. Now, if you want to keep the friendship, you know, that might not go so well, and you may risk losing the friendship. In some cases, you'd actually be glad to be rid of the friendship, right? And that's one of the side effects and one of the dangers of when people don't want to be responsible for their own lives, right? Their own stuff. So those sorts of things are going to happen. That does not make you mean. I really want to be clear about this. It means that somebody is has too low of a skill set, and they're not capable enough for you to be able to work with them. And that is a very, very different thing than being mean. So I want you to understand this, you know, because I talked about this in shows in the past, and we've gone over this a lot, where what is a very healthy serving behavior for you to do is often considered bad, mean, and wrong for people when they've got a lot of codependency. And because people consider those behaviors bad and wrong, that's one of the reasons why it's so hard for them to hold a boundary themselves in codependency. It's also why people have a hard time implementing certain behaviors to get themselves out of codependency, because those behaviors that are healthy may actually be seen as bad and wrong. So, and this is one of the reasons why there's so much hardship in codependency, is because you're wrong for doing something healthy, you're wrong for holding a boundary, you're pretty much wrong when there's enough codependency for doing anything but take it with some people in certain areas, because that's all they're really capable of. It's not all they're capable of doing, but it can certainly feel like that in certain moments, and it can be in enough areas where you really aren't going to be able to work with the person at all. So thank you so much. I'm sorry we didn't get to the mailbag today here, but just, you know, for anybody who did write in, you are in there and it will get to you at a certain time. But I really felt it was really important to have that conversation about codependency, because a lot of people I see really mess themselves over because they think it's bad and wrong in order to implement certain healthy behaviors. So with that, I do coaching. I mean, I do reads, you know that, because I'm here every single week, but I also do coaching. And you can come to enlightenmentinthecity.com, or you can find me here at newsforthesoul.com, and you can just write me, and we can book an appointment. The first one is free. It's called the Clarity Session, so we can get to know each other and find out what your needs are, et cetera, et cetera. I do want to be clear, because I do talk about codependency. I'm not a therapist. So when people are in coaching, unless you have somebody who specifically has taken training to process trauma, coaching is about skill building. It's not about processing trauma. So even those things may come up, to come for coaching, you do need to be able to do the work. And that's really important. When people have, you know, so much trauma that they really don't feel like they should have to do the work, that would be a really good time to talk to a therapist. Somatic therapy is really good for that. It's a really good way to help release some of the trauma in the body, and that can make it easier to do your self-development work. So again, you know, if you're willing to do your work and you are, you know, more out of codependency than the subjects that I'm talking about, you're not, you're out of an abusive, you're not inside of an abusive relationship, you know, you're not